This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins. Sitting in for Tony today is the producer of Washington Watch, Russ Jones.
It's Friday. Good to be with you. Wow, so much going on. Memos and Groundhog Day. We'll talk about that later. But it's out. The GOP memo has been released and declassified. And it shows the FBI and the DOJ relied on a dossier paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign to obtain FISA warrants against the Trump campaign. Representative Francis Rooney of Florida will join us to weigh in on the memo that everybody is talking about today. And a new article suggests that even liberal critics have to acknowledge that President Trump's reinstatement and expansion of the pro-life Mexico City policy is having a global effect. We'll talk with Rebecca Ose. She's the Associate Director of Research for the Center for Family and Human Rights about how the reinstatement is changing the politics of abortion in foreign lands. And have you noticed that the notion of transparency in the media, well, it's been thrown out the window when it comes to this GOP memo that's being released. The mainstream media is just having a heyday, and I've lost count how many times we've talked about media meltdowns on this program. We'll talk to our friend John Hayward of Breitbart News about that. And all of this great content you can find on the web at tonyperkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, and you can follow me at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, the four-page memo that's been discussed for months has been declassified and now released to the public. With us now is Congressman Francis Rooney. He represents the 19th Congressional District of Florida, and he serves as the Vice Chair of Foreign Affairs Committee. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, thanks for having me back on.
Well, I know you're busy, and this is sure the water cooler talk today. We're reading that a former British spy who compiled anti-Trump dossier had personal animus towards Trump. That's what we're seeing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was based on fake news. The guy created a news story that reverberated back to create the basis for his comments, combined with probably a little disinformation from Russia, and then creates this dossier paid for by the Democrats. And the FBI is in a huge hurry to use that to get a warrant.
Yeah, and so apparently what we're seeing here is that Steele had this thing against then Donald Trump, candidate Donald Trump, and what we're seeing is that a senior official at the FBI sought the FISA warrant, and we're hearing that some of these interviews may have never happened if not for that warrant. Is that right?
That's what I've seen. That's what I've been told. And the other thing is a lot of footprints are all over those warrants. You don't just get one of those warrants by one low-level investigator signing an affidavit. There's a lot of footprints on those warrants, and they all are based on that dossier, which is based on false information. So I think it's a big problem.
So let me ask you, some are not pleased that this was released. What are your thoughts? Do you think this is good for the public to see? And is it a lot of smoke that there? I can't imagine this memo being released if it hadn't been declassified.
Yeah, I think I had a hand in starting it up when I called for a purge of these people that are partisan or not reflective of the impartial bureaucracy that we've come to expect. But, transparency and First Amendment rights are not partisan. They should apply to everybody. It's kind of like the free speech thing on campus. Free speech is okay if it's liberal free speech, but not okay if it's conservative free speech. Transparency is okay if it's their stuff, but if we want to get this out about this defective FISA warrants, it's not fair. Give me a break.
Now, what do you think about the Democratic memo? I guess they've got a memo out there too. Have you seen that, and do you think it should be released?
I've not seen it, but I don't know that I have a problem with releasing it. I mean, I believe that we're right. Mm-hmm. I believe that the principles of limited government, protecting the Constitution, protecting the First Amendment is the right thing to do. So as long as their memo contains facts, not anecdotal conjecture, like our memo contains facts, then I'm okay with it. But if it's a bunch of anecdotal conjecture, then we need to out it.
And one of the things that's been interesting to see is this unverified anti-Trump dossier used to justify surveillance in the 2016 Trump campaign. And then, of course, there's people out there saying, oh, this is just supposed to be, this is a diversion from the Mueller investigation and aren't allowing this to stand on its own merit.
You have a document paid for by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton campaign, compiled by a foreigner, getting information from Russians and some fake news he created. I mean, to me, that's a cesspool.
And can't I, you know, after I've got all the pages here, been looking over them most of the day, and even a letter from the White House, and after reading through this, I can see how President Trump has the right to be frustrated, and he's expressed that over time.
Yeah, and see, what got my attention early on, before the memo was ever created, when I first made my statement about a purge that the liberal media went nuts about, is I read the things that came out in the paper, and I thought, wow, why is a guy named Orr meeting with the agent during a presidential campaign, and his wife works for the people creating the dossier?
Right, right. Here?
And then why are they in Andy McCabe's office? In it said the articles in the newspaper said in Andy's office. We were talking about insurance to make sure that President Trump didn't win. And I'm not saying it's about Trump or not about Trump. I'm saying it's about we need an impartial bureaucracy. This comes on the heels of the IRS thing, where we found out the IRS was going after religious and conservative organizations. I'm scared about the deep state.
And you're walking the halls there of the Capitol. Congressman, at what point do you think the DNC connected all of these points that we're seeing today?
I don't know where they were in the tax stuff. I don't know if that was strictly Obama administration people or not. But in this thing here, they were paying for that dossier, so they were knee-deep in it.
Mm-hmm. And are you surprised at the way they are reacting to all this today?
I'm not surprised. There's all kinds of political spin going on out here. And what I hope the American people will do, and they usually do, is make the right judgment. Look at the facts, think about it, and say, what's the big picture that's going on here? You know, the American people knew instinctively that Roosevelt's court packing plan was wrong. They knew that the burglary at Watergate was wrong. Mm-hmm. They're going to know this is wrong because it's wrong.
One of the things I'm reading here is that the memo represents an irresponsible release of highly sensitive classified information. And the response is the complaints from the left about Congress doing its job and Democrats' sudden opposition to transparency represents a hypocritical and partisan attempt to prevent the public from learning about the memo's contents, contrary to unauthorized leaks of classified information so prevalent in Washington today. The memo's release occurred pursuant to the committee's oversight function and a process laid out in House rules that balances the public and national interest. I'll be curious to see, you know, how all of the different constituents, and, you know, I'm sure you'll hear from your people about this as well.
Well, can I make one more point, too?
Sure.
Before it was released, in their frantic effort to prevent release, prevent transparency, the Democrats were saying, oh, the memo contains sources and methods of gathering intel. Does not contain one source or method that is gathering intel at all. It contains information about how that warrant was procured. And so once again, we've seen all this conjecture debunked with the release of the memo.
Right. And one of the other charges that I saw here, and we're hearing it all over the media today, is that the committee drafted the memo in coordination with the White House. And the response is that is patently false. No one outside the committee played any role in drafting or compiling the memo. The committee had no communications with the White House about the contents of the memo until after the committee voted to make it publicly available. So there you go.
Yeah, a TV reporter asked me that question the other day about that, and I said, look, I don't really care who they consulted with. As long as it's based on facts, American people need to get the facts. They will make the right judgment. They made the right judgment in November.
Yeah, and don't you think that's true? A lot of times it seems like the knowledge and wisdom that the public has and tries to sort out the information, they're not given the benefit of the doubt to come up with the right decisions. And you're right, you said they made the right choice, you know, in the election.
Well, what did Schiff say the other day? We can't release this because the American people are too dumb to understand it. I consider that a huge insult on the intelligence of my fellow citizens.
Yeah, and Congressman, I think you're right. The average citizen sees right through that, and they make decisions based on how they're treated and as if they don't have the wherewithal to come to the right conclusions. And, you know, folks run their households every day. They make major ethical decisions every single day with their children, with their family, with dying parents, you name it. So I think the average person does have the wherewithal to make the right decision and to do what's right.
Yeah, and that just shows me all the more why I don't want a bunch of isolated urban liberal elites telling us what to do.
So now it's out there. What happens now?
Well, I think we need to let it percolate, digest, let the chips fall, roll up on the news cycle run. And I just think that
We're losing you a little bit there, Congressman.
I hope it will draw the people that were so earnest in being partial back into more traditional, I work for the FBI, the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and so now it's going to sift out there. The media is going to do its thing. We're going to talk about the media alone in a separate segment here next coming up. And so we'll see how that it gets delivered there. And just some quick thoughts. The vice president and the president spoke at the Republican retreat. What do you have to say about what you're hearing there?
Well, you know, I think that we have a lot of work to do. We have a big 2018 to deal with welfare reform, to get the government financed and paid for, to figure out how to get more money into the defense so we can do the things we need to do around the world. You know, there's a $150 billion gap between what defense can get under the sequester and what defense feels it needs. And somehow or another, we got to reconcile all that. Because what kind of country do you have if you don't know who's coming in and out of it and if you can't repel foreign invaders?
Right, right. And do you see any partisan issues that you're going to be able to reach across the aisle and the other side's going to reach across?
Be a nonpartisan issue unless someone wants to learn how to speak Korean or Chinese or something.
Yeah, I heard President talk about prison reform. You would think that would be an issue.
Prison reform is another one. I don't clue in on that so much as I do the foreign policy stuff. I think we have some big opportunities and issues in the Middle East. I'm personally becoming more and more a proponent of considering Kurdistan their quest for independence as something to look at. You know, Kurdistan's been a stable ally. We know they're our best fighters. We know in Yemen right now that the Saudis can't fight very well. So maybe we ought to rethink our paradigm in the Middle East a little bit. And what is statecraft over there? What are borders?
Well, Congressman Rooney, thank you so much. Appreciate you taking time on this Friday to be with us, to weigh in on this. You have a blessed weekend, and thank you for serving the country.
Thank you, Russ. Have a great weekend.
Well, as I said, I've lost count how many times we've reported about the liberal media meltdown. It's happening again with the release of the GOP memo. Coming up next, we're going to talk with John Hayward with Breitbart News after the break. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, and it's Friday. Good to be here with you.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
We begin tonight with the drama over the Nunes memo. Keep in mind, it is in many ways a phony drama. Phony because the release of the memo is, by all accounts, a foregone conclusion. It is and always has been. It appears it will essentially be something of a press release, possibly just emailed out, perhaps under the letterhead of the Republican House Intelligence Committee membership, chaired, of course, by Congressman Devin Nunes.
This transcript reads like a script from one of the best episodes of West Wing. In real time, in sometimes astonishing language, this explains how we got to this dramatic point tonight where congressional Republicans and the White House are apparently planning to, not just threatening to, release highly classified information to the public despite the objections of the agency that classified it.
Yeah. That's been the setup here the last few days and weeks coming into the anticipation of the release of the memo. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. It's Friday. And, you know, does this wear you out? It wears me out. I've been in the media industry for some 30 years, three decades. Studied at the University of Missouri. Been doing this a long time. And transparency and fairness are key components to investigative journalism and reporting, to the ethics of journalism. And well, the mainstream media's crusade for transparency seems to be at the end of the road, as various news organizations called for Nunes's memo on alleged FBI abuses to stay private. And well, today they're forced to cover the release, and it ain't pretty. It's not going well. We're learning a campaign to brief major media outlets to get the media to use their credibility or so-called credibility to the dossier. Joining us now is John Hayward. He's been on the show before, investigative reporter for Breitbart News. John, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me again. You know, I thought we were supposed to be in a golden age of investigative journalism. It was the great renaissance of investigation after January, and now all of a sudden they don't want to investigate. They found a story they don't want to tell, and they don't want to know anymore, and they're closing their eyes and plugging their ears. This is weird. I thought investigative journalism was back in a big way.
You would think. You know, it is weird, isn't it? I mean, one of the things about being in this business, in any business, really, is understanding your own bias. And I imagine you know what I'm talking about. When you understand your own filter that you look at the world through, but yet you're still able to do your job. And I just don't see that here.
It's true, and this is a really interesting example of that, because I think if you read any given handful of six stories, let's say, about the memo, you're going to find six different parts of it that the writer in question thinks is the most important part. Everyone is zooming in on it's 4 pages long, you know, but you'd think it was 1,000 pages long from the number of different things that people are zooming in on and saying, this is the part that really matters right here. Everybody has their one little detail that they think defines it. For me, I think the defining detail is the part where talks about how the FBI misrepresented information to obtain this FISA warrant, this warrant for surveillance that they used. I don't see how you can possibly spin away that that was deliberate malfeasance. And it wasn't by a lot of people. It wasn't the whole FBI. This isn't a ringing indictment of the entire Justice Department or anything like that. It's a small group of people with a specific partisan agenda that specifically lied, misrepresented information in order to gain this warrant. And it doesn't matter that the person that they put the warrant on, Carter Page, was maybe a suspicious character that should have been under surveillance or anything like that. We were told, as the American people, that there would be very precise procedures followed before any of these vast surveillance powers were used. And that doesn't seem to be the case here. I think that's the real story to come out of this.
And you heard the setup here before you came on, the clips I put on. You know, CNN's Anderson Cooper, he called the talk of the release of the memo a source of phony drama. I just don't know how some of these folks keep a straight face, but they do. They're dead serious.
Well, particularly since the phony drama that sticks in my mind is that for the last 48 hours or so, we've been hearing an endless stream of stories planted in the media by Democrats that this memo was devastating to national security. Some of your clips said that. They were saying, oh, it's going to destroy the national security apparatus. It's classified. We can't release this. It was nothing of the kind. There's nothing in that memo that was in any way jeopardizing of national security. And the only sources, the only people, sources of information that it talks about are people and things that we all know about already. Christopher Steele, the author of this dossier, the reportage on the dossier that was employed. There is absolutely nothing here to justify any of the scare stories we were fed by the Democrats and by the media about releasing the memo. All of that was a complete fabrication, and it was repeated without question by major media outlets for 2 days to try to scare people out of releasing this thing. That's a separate scandal in itself that I think needs to be examined more closely.
And John, you know, didn't Steele's numerous encounters with the media violate the cardinal rule of source handling?
Well, the FBI certainly thought so. That's why they stopped dealing with him. He was cashiered or terminated, whatever word you want to use, by the FBI precisely because he did that. He took his dossier and he went out to media organizations and he shopped it around to try to get them to publish it, and none of them would bite, which is a pretty extraordinary thing, isn't it? This is a dossier full of devastating information about Trump at a time when the media was desperate to stop him, and yet they all looked at this thing and said, nope, this doesn't measure our standards. We're not going to publish it. And the FBI was upset that he did that, so that was the end of his formal relationship with them. But he did it because he was determined to stop President Trump. The memo makes that clear. He was personally determined to stop him from becoming the president of the United States. And I think if you're looking for collusion to interfere with our political process, here you have it. You know, this is the real collusion. The Hillary Clinton campaign, the Democratic National Committee, this individual who is a foreign spy, his Russian contacts, these people colluded to influence the outcome of an election. I mean, that's a big story. There's no way to spin that away as a nothing burger.
And talk about carrying water, that using the media to influence. I mean, that's nothing new, but we see it. It's spelled out here, getting the media to report on this.
As a fascinating aspect of what the memo says, there is a point at which the FBI went to get their warrant for surveillance, and they cited Christopher Steele's dossier, and then they cited a media report, a Yahoo News account, of the information in the dossier to substantiate it, but that report was just the dossier. It was just Christopher Steele talking to a reporter about his own dossier. Yeah. So it's a perfect example of a media echo set up in order to justify a political action.
John Hayward, thank you for being with us on this Friday. You've always got great insights. John Hayward of Breitbart News. Thanks, John.
Thanks for having me.
Well, President Trump's pro-life policies are having a huge impact both domestically and around the globe, Rebecca Ose will be here when we return on how the Mexico City policy is affecting foreign relations. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You've tuned into Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Washington Watch is powered by the Family Research Council. It's always a joy to be with you. Love being in touch with the folks, the listeners. You power me. You give me a lot of energy, and I love hearing from you. When I'm on the show hosting and your calls and your feedback, it's always good, and Tony does too. You know, some of President Trump's harshest critics admit that his reinstatement and expansion of the pro-life Mexico City policy has been highly effective in advancing the United States' moral influence to curb the international abortion lobby. Isn't that fun when the other side has to admit something? With us now is Rebecca Ose. She is a PhD expert in this field. She is the Associate Director of Research for the Center for Family and Human Rights at CFAM in Washington, D.C. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've written a very insightful column on this topic, and it's don't you kind of feel like, well, how'd that taste saying that you had to admit that maybe it's having an effect?
Well, you're right. I mean, there's been, you know, it is about 1 year since Donald Trump reinstated and expanded the Mexico City policy, and the pushback from the abortion lobby has, of course, been very fierce, and, of course, on the anniversary, there's been a resurgence of that. Just so your listeners have a little bit of context, there is already a law in place, it's called the Helms Amendment, that prohibits U.S. funding for family planning to go to abortion or abortion advocacy overseas. What the Mexico City policy does, and this is a policy, not a law, that's been enacted by Republican administrations since Ronald Reagan, is it says that not only can you not use U.S. funding to promote abortion or to do abortion overseas, but if you are a group that does those things, you are not eligible for U.S. Funding for family planning. And the Trump administration recently expanded this policy to cover a broader range of different funding streams of global health and other things. So So this is important because it says not only are we not going to fund abortion, but we think that it is so reprehensible that if that is what you do, you are not eligible for U.S. funding at all.
And isn't this a stark departure from the Obama administration? Matter of fact, the State Department pushed very liberal agendas in its policies overseas. Isn't that right?
That is true. Although what's interesting is you hear the critics of the Mexico City policy saying that even when the policy is not in effect, even when Democratic administrations have rescinded the policy, a lot of the international NGOs on the ground continue to act as if they're complying with the policy because they know the next administration may be Republican. And so in anticipation that the policy may come back, they don't necessarily change how they operate when it's not in effect.
So what we're seeing here is that reinstating the Mexico City policy is changing what you call the abortion, the politics of abortion on the ground, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's been admitted by abortion advocates that it creates what they call a chilling effect on advocacy in countries. Obviously, these are foreign countries. We're talking about their sovereign countries with the right to make their own laws and policies, but that our funding not going to NGOs that are trying to get these governments to liberalize their laws is making abortion much more toxic in terms of how it's seen on the ground. One report that was very critical of the policy quoted people in Ethiopia saying that if abortion is a positive thing for Ethiopia's women, then why would the U.S. government not support it? So it creates a clear line separating abortion from women's health.
And of course, as we've been talking about here on the program for several weeks, the Pain Capable Bill, there are some countries that have stricter laws.
Absolutely. In fact, many countries, most countries in the world have stricter laws. You know, the United States is one of the few where abortion is legal through the entire term of pregnancy.
Yeah, so you're seeing that there's been some pushback by some of these groups on the policy, but at the same time, they are seeing differences on the ground there. How do you think it makes President Trump look in light of signing these on? Do you think there are leaders over there that are supporting the reinstatement of this and maybe quietly applauding that?
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of people who are,
because you don't hear about it in the media.
Well, the trouble is the largest organizations that work that are affected by this policy are Maurice Stopes International and the International Planned Parenthood Federation, which, of course, are hardcore abortion lobbyists overseas. And they refuse to comply with this policy and then talk about how they're having to close clinics and suspend the delivery of other less controversial services. So they're, in a sense, holding these services hostage to their abortion advocacy because they can't comply or refuse to comply with this policy. But what people don't often know is that this policy does nothing to reduce U.S. funding for global health. It just means that the organizations getting that funding are not the ones promoting the abortion agenda, as well as, you know, the broader sexual rights mm-hmm. agenda that includes very controversial sex ed and other things. But the ones who you see quoted in the news are always Planned Parenthood and Maurice Stopes, who like to make it seem as though a reduced funding to them means reduced funding for global health.
Excellent. Great point. Rebecca Ose, thank you for being with us. We're out of time. Appreciate you being with us. We've been talking with Rebecca Ose. She's the Associate Director of Research for the Center for Family and Human Rights. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And you heard, she made a really good point. The funding's not going down. It's just, this isn't part of the policy that we support. So there are people out there, oh, the sky's falling, the money's going away. That's not true. You heard it right here. You're listening to Washington Watch. When we come back, let's go to the phone lines. Give us a call, 866-372-7234.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
I'll give you a winter prediction. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, and it's going to last you for the rest of your life.
I love that movie, Groundhog Day. That's a clip from Groundhog Day. You know, and forecasters all over the country are referring to the furry rodent today. Punxsutawney Phil. I'd be curious to hear from somebody that's ever been to see the groundhog. You know, it's when the groundhog comes out, and if it sees its shadow, you know, there's going to be more winter. And in between 1887 and 2017, Phil has seen his shadow 103 times, which means more winter, and has not seen his shadow 18 times, which means there's going to be an early spring. And last year, Phil was wrong. Poor Phil. But, you know, Groundhog Day, it's one of those movies I can watch over and over and over again. Of course, my wife says there's not too many movies that I can't watch over and over again. She gets tired of that. But, you know, the movie, it gives us an opportunity to talk just a little bit here about an essential truth that Jesus doesn't want us to worry about what the future is going to bring. And I know there's some listening here that life may feel like, you know, Groundhog Day. Those things, you know, that bad day just keeps on repeating itself over and over and over and over again. In today's weather forecast, you know, for Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, where thousands, you know, they gather for these festivities, calls for cloudy skies and chance of snow showers. How many of us have an app on our phone, a weather app, that we've just got to know what the weather's going to be? You know, news stations make thousands of millions of dollars because of their weather on advertising. People just want to know. They want to know how to dress. They want to know what the future's going to be like. What's tomorrow going to be like? And then there's the Farmer's Almanac. Gosh, you want to know what's going to be like a year from now? Give us a call. I want to talk. Let's talk about this. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Why do you think we want to know so much what it's going to be like? And it's so difficult just to go with the flow and how it's going to be part of just what God brings us that today. I know it depends on what we're going to wear for the day, but does it have a greater impact? Give us a call, 866-372-7234. Jesus said, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life?" It's a great, great scripture, and it's a great reminder that even if we know there's nothing we can do about it, and how many times do we borrow worry? We worry about things that we have absolutely no control over or we can do anything about. Now, I'm guilty of that. Give us a call. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. Give us a call. I'd love to hear from you on the show here today. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Greg in Calvert, Texas. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I love listening to this show on my drive home every day.
Well, we love having
you. Y'all are a blessing.
Oh, you're a blessing. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to talk to you. You know, down here in Texas, we got this fella called BK's Bob. He's an armadillo. He's our version of Punxsutawney Phil. I haven't been home to see the news yet to see whether or not he saw his shadow today.
What's his name? What's his name?
BK's Bob. He's an armadillo.
An armadillo. He's located
just outside of BK's, just outside of Austin, Texas.
So they bring him out, and he stands around and looks for his shadow?
They do. And if he sees his shadow, you know, it's just our version of the groundhog.
Yeah. Well, don't you think the outcome could be radically different in a sunny place like Texas versus Pennsylvania? Don't you know that the weather in Pennsylvania has got to impact that? I mean, it gets cold there.
Well, yeah, and we get cold spells occasionally down here, and
yeah.
It's all more about the fun than anything else. Shucks, we all know that.
Oh, that just got my funny bone. That's great, Greg.
Weathermen, you know, weather prognosticators can be wrong all the time. And it's the only people that can be wrong all the time and keep their job. Think about that.
That's true. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for calling the show. Got to look for that armadillo down there in Texas. I got to go look that up. Let's go to Belinda in Missouri. How you doing, Melinda?
I'm doing good. How are you, Tony? I want to say I love your show. Thank you for what you do.
Yep. I'm Russ sitting in for Tony.
To get some of the Democrats. Huh?
I'm Russ sitting in for Tony.
Oh, sorry, Russ. You're from Missouri, aren't you?
I am from Missouri, the Show Me State. You're in my hometown.
I thought so.
Yep.
Yes. Sorry, Russ. I hadn't even heard you say who you were the whole time I've been listening to the show while I've been driving home. Well, from Missouri, then you know why we like the weather, because we're a bunch of farmers down here. We live and die by the weather.
That is very true. That's a very good point. And, you know, I also lived, tell anybody, I lived in Kansas for a little while, two different times. But, yeah.
Okay, they're our neighbor. We don't like Kansans.
But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, we have to know what's going on. We can't just live, you know, get up in the morning and take it as it comes, because we have to make plans. We got animals we got to plan to care for, and crops we got to plan to plant and harvest and things like that. So weather's very important to us.
Well, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. And, hey, you keep listening to the show. Let's go to Nikki down in Richland, Mississippi. I was just down there the other day. Hey, Nikki, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I am good, thank you. What's on your mind?
I was going to say, you are asking why we want to know the future. It's because we want to be in control.
Yeah, that's for sure. We want to control a lot of things. And you know what I've learned? The older I get, the more I learn there's not much I can really control.
What?
Only how I respond to things.
That's true.
And sometimes I respond well, and sometimes I don't respond too well. But that's human nature too, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you. I was just down your way.
Thank you.
The other day, I was down in Madison. Well, let's go to Oklahoma City. Hi, welcome to the show. How are you, Dee Dee?
Hi, Russ. How's it going?
Oh, everything's great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I thought this weather question was kind of funny because I immediately thought about my 12-year-old son who checks the weather on an app before he leaves the house. Every time he leaves the house, he checks the weather app to see what the temperature is in the moment so he can dress accordingly. But he won't plan beyond that. If he stays out any longer than he thinks he is, he ends up suffering later because he didn't prepare for what came afterwards. And it just made me think of how, irregardless of whether or not we can control it, like the lady said earlier, or control our situations, or even, you know, understand it better because of the weather, we need to be prepared for whatever God has in store is coming our way, whether we can predict it or not.
Yeah, that's great. Very good points. Dee Dee, thank you so much for calling the show. We appreciate you. Let's go to Jerry in Conroe, Texas. Hi, Jerry. How are you today on this Friday?
Just fine, sir. And I believe my point has been made already. I feel like today we want to be in control of our own lives rather than, faith that God is going to work each and every day and control every aspect of things with that spot of free will. But right. Here in Houston, you know, we've been flooded, and we've had some pretty good freezes and seen a lot of snow. You know, the folks around here have seen a lot of different weather patterns over a very short period of time. But each and every day, I just want to remind your listeners that we need to put our faith in God and trust Him. Realize that there's special circumstances about planting crops and, you know, taking care of animals and stuff to be prepared. And
right.
And God has graced a few people to be able to predict weather patterns. So I don't guess it's all bad. But,
no.
Jerry, you don't put enough faith in God.
And you know, there is a point, those that have a livelihood of farming greatly depend on the weather and whether they can feed their families and families across the world, actually. So, and I lived in Kansas, you know, a couple of different times, and talk about watching the weather, those tornadoes. There is nothing there to stop the tornadoes, and people watch the weather pretty closely there, too. But, Jerry, you made very good points. Appreciate you calling. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Dominic in Sumner, Texas. Hi, Dominic.
Hello, Russ. Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Russ.
Yeah.
Appreciate what you guys do.
Thank you.
Got a quick statement, and it's regarding the political climate instead of the cold climate. Andy McCabe, in front of the committee, had said that he could have not gotten that FISA warrant without the Steele dossier getting involved. My question is, it seems to me, Russ, that we could put all this to bed if we could just get a statement from the FISA court, although I know they're secret, and they're supposed to be secretive, but a statement stating that if they knew what we know now, would that have made a difference in issuing that warrant? What do you think? And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Yeah, well, no, it's hard to say, but I do believe that the warrant, what we're seeing, and I've read through the documents, without that warrant, certain things wouldn't have happened, which was how they justified the decisions they made, and the testimonies testifying before Congress wouldn't have happened. That's how they used the leverage to get certain things to happen and to supposedly, it looks like, to manipulate the process. At least that's how I see it. Let's go to Pete in South Carolina. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ. How are you?
Good, I'm good.
Great job with the show. Real quickly, Mexico City policy, what is the claim that's made by the abortion people that that the Mexico City policy will halt the money, but in reality, what happens? Can you say that again, please?
Well, the point that Rebecca made is that the funds haven't stopped, but there are certain areas of the international aid that are not going to go for abortions. But as far as feeding the poor and taking care of the hunger programs and whatnot, those monies are still there. So the point that she was trying to make, which is an excellent point, because the left likes to use, the sky's falling, you're going to cut the money. No, the money isn't getting cut off, but this is our position on abortion, and we won't support the programs that support abortion. Is that what you heard her say?
And that's it. So the other money still goes. These countries are still getting our aid to
yes.
help the poor and all kinds of things. Right, that's what I thought. Thank you. Yeah, it's really important to know that, because you've always got to counter these lies that are just always coming at us.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for calling, Pete. Right. It's important to know how to argue the points. That's one of the things that you learn in debate. You need to know both sides of the argument, be able to defend your perspective. Let's go to Deborah in Arkansas. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
It's great. I just got off work. I'm happy.
Well, you're happy. It's Friday.
Yeah, just got off.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to respond to the question of why we feel like we need to know the future and need to know what's going to happen, and we're worrisome sometimes. I kind of feel like if we have truly a thankful heart, then we won't be as worried about things. No matter
right.
what's going to happen, you know, we're thankful. We know where our blessings come from the Lord, and we know that He's going to take care of us no matter what the end result is.
Well,
and I just think a lot of things have to do with a thankful heart.
Absolutely. Amen. Thank you so much. Real quickly, Robert in Mississippi, we're about out of time. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Russ. How are you today?
I'm good. We've just got about 20 seconds. What's on your mind?
We're talking about the weather and predicting the weather. One thing that we do here in North Mississippi is we watch the oak trees for the acorn crop that they produce. It goes back to, you know, God providing for the animals. If we have a big acorn crop, you can put your money that it's going to be a cold weather here.
So Mississippi has its version of the little rodent Phil. It's the walnuts. I didn't, or the oak trees. I didn't know that. Robert, you there? I guess we lost Robert. Thanks, Robert. So got to watch the oak trees and predicting the weather here in Mississippi. Well, friends, we're out of time. This show goes so fast. It's good to be with you. I leave you with this. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles, it says in Isaiah 40:31. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. I'm Russ Jones, been sitting in for Tony Perkins. You've been listening to Washington Watch. Have a blessed weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.